Oh yes, oh yes, oh yes. The Honorable Appellate Court, 5th District of the State of Illinois is now in session. Please be seated.
Be seated, thank you. First case is People v. Brandon R. Ford, 5-22-0240. Appellant's represented by Mr. Hanson, is that correct?
Yes, Your
Honor. Are you ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, welcome to the historic 5th District Courthouse. This is our first full day in in-person oral arguments since COVID. So, I've been on the court for 3 years now, and this is my first time in person, we've been Zoom for a while now. Welcome to court.
We share that today, sir.
You may proceed when you're ready.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, opposing counsel. I'm Craig Hanson from the Office of the State Appellate Defender, representing the appellant in the matter before this court today, Mr. Brandon Ford. I'd like to begin with our first issue. And that is, we will ask the court to vacate Mr. Ford's conviction on count two. Count two and count four, the convictions that Mr. Ford accrued arise from the same act. The state has conceded this point, and we are in agreement on the remedy as well, where count four is a class X offense and count two is a class one felony offense. The more serious charge will remain. This court, therefore, we ask that it vacate Mr. Ford's conviction on count two. Moving to issue number two, Mr. Ford contends it was error for the trial court to admit MC's other crime evidence. As background, the trial court admitted the testimony of a woman by the name of MC, or as MC for the purposes of this argument, concerning allegations of prior sexual misconduct by Mr. Ford. Admission of other crimes evidence in these cases, although it is allowed to show propensity to commit sex crimes, is in fact allowed. We are all familiar with that. However, it is not automatic. Even in those cases where sexual misconduct against minors is alleged, the court must still consider a number of factors before allowing that testimony to be admitted. Those factors include proximity in time between the prior alleged conduct and the conduct in the instant case, the degree of similarity between the two allegations of misconduct, and as well as other relevant facts and circumstances. And I'd like to go down here through the list and discuss our contentions on each point. Mr. Ford contends that the trial court abused its discretion in admitting MC's testimony and that he suffered undue prejudice as a result of that. The first factor is proximity in time. Here, depending on whose calculations you wish to rely on, a period of between 11 and 15 years elapsed between the allegations that were raised by MC and testified to at Mr. Ford's trial in this case, and the allegations from AK, the victim in this case.
Mr. Hanson, my understanding is there is no bright line rule in Illinois on what length of time.
No, there is no bright line rule.
In this case, it's about 15 years. And there's a case, People versus Davis, that said 20 years is okay.
Yes. The Supreme Court specifically said it would not establish a bright line rule in Donahoe, which does reference Davis. Davis is a very interesting case, and when the Supreme Court declined to adopt a bright line rule, it cited a number of cases. Davis in particular was a very interesting case where the defendant in Davis The evidence that was admitted was not admitted as prior crimes evidence for the purpose of showing propensity. It was actually evidence of consensual adult sexual conduct that was admitted for the purpose of showing the defendant's common plan. Excuse me. It was admitted for purposes other than propensity. The other cases cited by the court in Donahue, Chavez and Ross, also they're distinguishable from this case because Chavez admitted a 15-year-old conviction, which is different than this case. Mr. Ford was acquitted of the charges in his case. And in Ross, the allegation of prior conduct, Ross is also referenced by Donahue in the court's decision not to establish a bright line. Ross was prior crimes evidence was admitted to show absence of mistake and the intent of the defendant. So in those cases cited by the Supreme Court, they failed to establish a bright line rule, or they declined to establish a bright line rule. But the cases that they relied on to underpin that judgment differ greatly from the facts in this particular case.
Thank you.
As I said, 11 to 14 years has elapsed, and yes, our court has declined to adopt a bright line rule. But that's not the only factor here, the elapse of time. Similarity of conduct is also one of the factors a court must consider. Here, admittedly, there were a number of similar factors, we would expect in cases involving sexual misconduct against children. However, while there are similarities, there are some distinct differences. For example, in her testimony, MC provided certain details in her allegations against Ms. Ford that were not present in AK's statements or her allegations. Also, MC testified that at the time of Mr. Ford's alleged prior misconduct, her siblings were at home. That differs from AK's testimony where she said they were alone. So while there are admittedly some similarities, there are also differences. But there are other factors as well that the court must consider. MC was an adult at the time of she testified, and again, approximately 11 to 15 years had elapsed. But she grossly misjudged the interval between the time she alleged the conduct by Mr. Ford and when she testified in this case, when they went to trial in that prior case. She estimated a few months had gone by when, in fact, 3 years had elapsed. Also, in this case, Mr. Ford did go to trial on those previous allegations. He was found not guilty. The transcripts of those trial and the records of that entire case, they weren't available. They weren't available to the state. They weren't available to the defense. They weren't available to the court. And they were unavailable to validate what MC was saying or used to impeach her. So that was just not available, which, again, is not unusual in cases where a defendant is acquitted of prior misconduct, but it does bear on the reliability of MC's testimony here. Most importantly, perhaps, is the fact that a jury found Mr. Ford not guilty of the prior alleged conduct. And when you consider all of those factors together, we allege the court made an unreasonable decision to allow MC to testify and bring in that information. The passage of time, the difference in details, MC's inability to recall the timeline of significant events related to her initial allegations, the absence of record and, Mr. Ford's acquittal, all bear on whether the court should have admitted, and we argue that the court abuses discretion in admitting that testimony, and therefore we ask that the court remand for a new trial. The last issue here is the Illinois Pattern Jury Instruction 11.66, which is required when in child sex cases where out-of-court statements are admitted. This was a closely balanced case. It pitted AK's allegations against Mr. Ford's denial. This is a closely balanced case, and that was established in Naylor. Here, the jury was not instructed to consider AK's maturity, the nature of her statements, or the circumstances under which her hearsay statements were made. Because the Supreme Court has never held that the normal jury instruction given to instruct the jury on witness credibility, 1.02, fully incorporates the required jury instruction, 1166, we argue that the case should be remanded for a new trial. And for the foregoing reasons, we ask this court to remand for a new trial or, in the alternative, vacate Mr. Ford's conviction under count two.
Are you asking for a plain error review on the issue of the jury instruction?
Yes, Your Honor.
And it's your belief that because it was a child against your client, that it was a closely balanced case?
That the evidence presented at trial, we're arguing that it was closely balanced because it pitted the child's allegations and only those allegations against Mr. Ford's denial of those allegations, where no other evidence is available to determine innocence or guilt.
How is it different from the Supreme Court case of People v. Sargent or the appellate court case from the Fourth District, People v. Booker, where they found it is error, clearly it's error, but it was harmless or didn't rise to the level?
Well, Sargent was not closely balanced. The defendant admitted to numerous sexual acts with both victims. Therefore, it was not a closely balanced case, and so that distinguishes it. Booker also is another case that talks about this, where the court broadly reasoned that, I see my time is up. Thank you. Booker, the defendant there made inconsistent statements to the police. It was perhaps not as closely balanced as this one is. And so I would say Booker is distinguishable, as well as Sargent, in this case.
All right, thank you. Other questions?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Not at this time, just in case.
Not this time.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Mr. Hanson. With respect to the second argument, MC in the 1.5, 7.3 testimony, I hate to do this. I was going to cite a couple of cases I found after the motion to cite additional authority I filed. One was Braddy, 2015, Allap 5th, 130354. It's basically this court's decision.
Are you citing new case law that's not part of your brief?
Yes, ma'am. Well, I'm asking permission.
Have you filed a motion in that regard?
I filed a motion to cite additional authority as to issue three, and I didn't come across these things until afterwards.
Did we allow that motion?
I've been allowed to do it before. I mean,
let's follow the rules. I mean, do you have a motion pending?
No. You know what? I'll withdraw. I'll withdraw that.
Thank you.
Came down to MC's reliability. The claims against the defendant in her case did not result in a conviction. There are cases out there that state if it didn't result in a conviction or a prosecution, it's not necessarily off the table. The main thing is reliability. And as for MC, she did only recall one time. It involved cold water, which might have had something to do with her memory. She wasn't completely alone, but she was the oldest sibling at 7, and the defendant was babysitting her and her siblings. So they were much younger. But there's absolutely no motive for this lady to come forward after 15 years or 12 years or whatever and relive this for no reason. She didn't know AK. She didn't know AK's family. She moved to Urbana. She moved from the country to the city. She had a boyfriend and a baby. She's working. And she sees it on a Facebook feed. And she says, basically, you know, me too. And I think her mom contacted AK's mom. And that's how her evidence was introduced, or how it became introduced. But I don't think the trial court abused its discretion under the circumstances, allowing her testimony to come in under 115 7-3.
Do you think that the courts should use the rule of People versus Montgomery as a guidepost at all with the 10-year rule, even though the Supreme Court has not set a bright-line test as referenced by Justice Vaughn? Do you think that the 10-year rule should be looked at in any way?
I do not, Your Honor.
Why not?
Well, for one thing, and the legislature has recognized this by, if I recall correctly, eliminating statute of limitations for cases such like this, offenses such like this, where you're dealing with Montgomery, it's felonies, misdemeanors involving dishonesty, if I'm correct. A lot can change in a person's life in 15 years. Maybe they were desperate or destitute and they needed to steal back then, so maybe it wouldn't be. But with sex offenses, especially if it follows a discernible pattern, and if we operate under the assumption that these conditions generally can't be cured, then I think that the remoteness is just one factor to consider, which is what Donahoe reflects. That answers your question. As for the third issue, failure to give IPI 11.66, at the post-trial hearing, this issue was raised. The trial court, relying on Sargent, finding it similar enough, said this was not a close case. No substantial prejudice resulted. The trial court was not the trier of fact, but he was there to see how all this played out. Defendant distinguishes Sargent. In there were recanted confessions, 115-10 statements, and the victim's testimony. That combination, Supreme Court said, is overwhelming. Not closely balanced, obviously, overwhelming. Here, we don't have recanted confessions, but the facts are similar to Choate, which was cited in the motion to cite additional authority, and the evidence was not found to be closely balanced. One thing this case has that neither Choate nor Sargent has is 7.3 testimony. So I think that would throw on the safe side of the scale and put it well beyond closely balanced, in my opinion. We also have to look at Choate instructs, other cases instruct. We got to look at the overall quality of the evidence in a common sense fashion. Now, AK gave age-appropriate, unprompted disclosures along the way. At trial, on page 394, she said she indicated things were otherwise cool between her and the defendant until this happened. She expressed concern about being around him. She expressed concerns about him being around her sister as she was getting older. So I think that was her motivation to disclose. At the post-trial hearing, also, there was a Krenkel issue. Trial counsel was alleged ineffective. He even conceded. Victim's testimony was very impactful. I think the record bears that out. And one thing I would say about the CAC interview with Carr, at the time of the hearing, she said, I'm just around the 1,000 interviews I've participated in. By the time of trial, she had done at least 1,000. And I would tell you that it shows in that interview, because she... And lastly, I would note, although in and of itself it's not indicative of anything, case law suggests, but the jury was out 25 minutes. And that's on page C7 of the records notation. Are there any questions?
In Booker, People versus Booker, what's the difference between the finding of harmless error and the fact that there was no plain error? Do you know the difference?
Between the lack of harmless error and plain error?
Yes, in Booker they found that the failure to give the jury instruction was harmless error, not plain error.
I would say that Booker predates more recent precedent that's spoken to the issue, I guess, because I don't think harmless error, and there's different tests in my mind with respect to Booker.
Do you think Booker supports your position on the failure to give the jury instruction?
I didn't find it particularly useful.
You didn't?
But I didn't cite it, Your Honor.
Okay. What about Sargent?
Sargent, absolutely.
And you don't agree with the defendant's analysis that it was not a close case in Sargent?
In Sargent, it was, they declared it overwhelming.
Overwhelming.
And not a close case with recanted confessions. He went in there and explained away. Actually, thank you, because that reminds me of one point, if you permit me to proceed.
Yeah.
The defendant, 2 points actually, when he was interviewed by the cops afterwards, he said, I didn't do anything. I'm sorry for what's going through.
Are you in this case or Sergeant?
This case.
Okay.
Say, I'm sorry, I don't know what she's talking about. Or he denied it. But the detective said it was funny. He also said something like, I had a good life. So he thought those were odd. And then also his denials of trial were just like, didn't happen. There were never suggestions. There were never indications. There's never any evidence to suggest why this little girl or why MC would falsely accuse him. If there are any other questions, that concludes my presentation.
Justice Cates, any further questions?
No, thank you.
No, thank you.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Your
Honor. Mr. Hanson, rebuttal.
May it please the court, opposing counsel. To be clear, Mr. Ford does not contend that MC was motivated by ill means or that she intentionally lied on the stand. We would like to draw the court's attention to the 11 to 15 years of intervening time during which it is possible for an individual to solidify and crystallize certain events that they believed happened over a long period of time. So we don't wish to cast aspersions on MC's testimony. The state noted that Sergeant did not have testimony admitted under 7.3, but this case did. But I think we have to look at the actual facts in Sergeant where it was overwhelming guilt. Where you have Sergeant that was, there were admissions to I think by my count, hundreds of acts, whether they were recanted or not. The evidence in that case was just not closely based. And to use Sergeant as a guidepost for determining in this case that the other crimes evidence was properly admitted, I think is a misnomer. Unless the court has any other questions, that's all I have.
Do you think, you said that you don't believe the evidence is close to balanced, but do you think?
Yes, I'm sorry. So
you said you don't believe the evidence is close to balanced in this case. Do you believe it is close to balanced in this case?
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you believe giving multiple statements that are consistent, does that weigh in our analysis of whether
in terms of AK's multiple statements?
Yes. That's
certainly part of something that a trier of fact may keep in mind. But again, it's based on when you have just two pieces of testimony, it does become a credibility contest. Naylor, made that.
What about this? Opposing counsel's argument that the jury he thought was only out a short time, does that weigh into the analysis of whether it's closely balanced?
Well, the jury wasn't properly instructed either, so I would argue that a jury that's not properly instructed may come to easier conclusions, not having to contend with the certain having actually been instructed to consider AK's maturity, which I think we can all agree differs from age. The circumstances under which those statements were made, as well as the other missing instructions that were not provided, which are required by Supreme Court rule and statute, and there is no blanket rule that says that standard jury instruction 1.02 suffices to fill the void when 11.66 is not given.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions?
Justice Cates? Justice Cooley?
No.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We've considered the briefs and we'll consider your arguments. We'll take the case under advisement and issue a decision in due course. Thank you.
Thank you.